Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I have an old friend on my show today. It's been a couple of years since she's been on the show, too long. Hello, April Messini.
Hi, Dr. Diana. How are you?
Good.
When you say an old friend, I know we're talking about we've known each other for a lot of years, not that we're old.
Yeah, no, especially you're not old. We've known each other since we both lived in Hawaii, so that is a lot of years.
15, I guess, now, right?
Something, yes. My goodness, how time does fly. Well, we've both created new lives for ourselves since then. I was widowed. My darling husband, Charlie, died very suddenly. And you were with Al Messini, who is such an amazing man. And he's also now died. But you dedicated your book for men only, Date Out of Your League. And you dedicated it to Al. And he, you know, I got to know him a little bit. And he really was an amazing man who created his life. And he said, life owes you nothing. And I thought it was very sweet. Tell the listeners, because I think it'd be interesting for them to hear just sort of a brief overview of Al Messini and what attracted you to him, and then you were married. Because he really created himself. He invented himself.
He sure did.
Himself.
He came from nothing. He started work at 10 years old in a Tootsie Roll factory when his father died. Mm-hmm. And they used to move from house to house. His mother would clean and fix it up. Mm-hmm. And then they'd move to another house. And when he first got out of college and was looking for a job, I remember he sent out over 500 resumes before he got his first interview. And he had to go into they were very, very poor. They lived in New Jersey, and he had to go into the city for his interview. And he was so poor that he couldn't get the train home, and he didn't have enough money for a taxi. So he actually went and borrowed money, found a police officer, borrowed money from them, gave him a whole story about how poor he was. He was afraid they didn't believe him, but he actually took the police officer's name and number and address and sent him his money back.
Oh, see, he had honor. He had integrity. And
he sure did.
I know you said that people could count on him. If he said he was going to do something.
If Al told you he was going to do something, you could bank on it.
Yeah.
You didn't need a contract with him. His word was his bond. If he said it, he meant it, and he fulfilled it on his promise, no matter what it was. And he always had, you know, he's one of these people. If he wanted something, mm-hmm. he would come up with a strategy of how to get it. He mm-hmm. was always interested in beautiful women, which is why he did, for instance, Star Search. He had the spokesmodels, and then he was partners with Eileen Ford for Supermodel of the World, and he always loved beautiful women. So he decided.
That's one reason he married you, darling April.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
But he also created and produced Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Yes, and Entertainment Tonight and Star Search. And Solid Gold. There are a whole bunch, but I wanted to tell you the reason I dedicated the book to him mm-hmm. is because of his strategy. He used to have a strategy for meeting women.
Let's hear that.
He decided that the women who win, because he loved beauty pageants, obviously, because they're beautiful women, but he decided mm-hmm. that the winner was going to have everybody's attention.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided he was going to go for the runner-up or the second runner-up. And his opening line was always, you should have won.
Oh, he was wise and flirtatious and knew the right things to say.
He sure did.
Yes. And that's probably one reason that you fell in love with him as well.
Yes, and he was very charming. He had impeccable manners, a real gentleman.
A real gentleman. That was my impression of him, too. So you dedicated this was your first book, Date Out of Your League, for Men Only.
Yes.
And actually, I accompanied you to the Learning Annex presentation.
Did you ever? And you embarrassed me.
I did.
You
why?
Have no problem talking about sex. And you said, look at April. She's turning red.
Oh, dear. Did I say that? Imagine. But that's one reason, because you weren't as comfortable talking about sexuality then, and I suppose that's one reason you had me do in this book, Chapter 19, Keep It Coming Between the Sheets,
yes.
Hot Sex Tips from Dr. Diana Wiley.
That's right. Well, no one does it like you.
Well, thank you. Well, nobody does relationship advice like you. And so let's hear about your statistics, because they're pretty impressive. You've been an advice columnist now for how many years? Over 10, I guess.
Well,
or maybe not quite 10.
Actually, you know, my advice column didn't start until after that class.
Yes, that's
right. You and I taught that class, and we put out Date Out of Your League, and then I did my second book, and that was for women, Think and Date Like a Man.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started getting all these questions sent to the publishers and to myself and then during interviews, and so I said, you know, I'm going to start a column, and that's what I did. And so it's kind of been a runaway train ever since then.
Yes, because you have, on your advice forum, you have over 20,000 original consumer relationship questions, and they've been posted and answered. I don't know how you do this.
I don't know how I do it either.
You must not sleep a lot.
I don't sleep.
Because you give very good answers. So people can go to askapril.com and see firsthand. And then you also have more than a million Twitter followers, right?
I have, Twitter followers, I'm at about 1.2 million. I have over 1 million Twitter followers, and I have over 500,000 Facebook fans.
And then you've been a guest columnist lots of places.
Yes.
And I really like the article that you forwarded to me that was published on Yahoo Personals, and it was had to do with why nice guys finish last.
Oh, yeah, so that got a lot of attention.
Yes, and it's still quoted, you said.
Oh, yeah, it still gets a lot of attention. It goes both ways. I have some nice guys who get real mad at me because they don't want to hear why they shouldn't be so nice. And it's not that I'm telling people to mistreat women or anything
right.
of that nature. I'm just saying have a little self-respect and don't gush and don't be too available and don't be too eager to please and don't do all those things in particular before you even know the woman. Because what a lot of so-called nice guys do is they get fixated on one particular woman and their entire ego, their whole being gets wrapped up into, is she going to say no to me? And if she rejects me, I'm just going to die. Well, first off, you don't even know if you like her.
Yeah, because there hasn't really been enough time. So the guy is maybe fearing rejection.
Yeah, he's too invested. Too invested too soon.
And you say in this article that it's really such a good idea to for the guy to value and respect yourself more.
Yes.
And that this guy does care too soon.
Too much
too soon.
Yes.
And and I think this is such a good point, too, that you make. She is not going to value him any more than he values himself.
That's right. It's just human nature. If something is too easily acquired and it doesn't take any work, it doesn't take any maintenance, it's just human nature. You don't value it as much. It's the equivalent. I always equate it to if you could go to McDonald's without saving any money, or you could go to the Four Seasons Grill and you have to save up and dress properly and everything else, which one do you value more? Forget about the price. It's just you have to put more effort into it. It takes more to get that one. So I don't care if you're a man or you're a woman. If it's too easy to get, you don't value it. And it doesn't mean it's not valuable, but just human nature, you perceive it as less valuable.
That's an excellent, excellent point. In your book, and I reread it in preparation for today's interview, Date Out of Your League for Men Only, stands up very well. You have really good advice. And I had a client this morning who is disabled, and he's been challenged. He's such a nice guy. He's a nice guy, but he's been challenged with meeting women, and your advice to say hello to lots of women really resonated for him, not just the young ones or the pretty ones. And he's actually been doing that. And
well, getting into practice, and you know what else it does? It gets you more comfortable, you being the person who's doing it. And I recommend that women do that, too.
Oh, yeah. Say more about that.
Yes. Well, I get so many complaints from women. They can't meet the right guy.
Yeah.
And so my immediate question is, well, how many guys do you meet in a day?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't meet any. Or I meet one. I said, well, out of every 10 guys, how many of those guys are you interested in? None.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I guess you better increase your odds. You better start meeting more men. And the way to do that is you just start saying hello to everybody. And you start going to places that are out of your comfort zone a little bit. If you've been going to the same coffee shop day after day, week after week, month after month, switch it up. Go to a different one. You know,
well,
you'd be going
you
to the
have
same-
You have in your book, Chapter 2, Playing the Numbers, and I actually shared this one statistic with my client this morning, and it's powerful because, just to back up a little bit, you say, you are the product, meaning the guy.
Yes.
And then these stats are really quite revealing. The world's best salesmen don't have a 100% sales rate or a 75% sales rate, nor do they have a 50% sales rate or even a 25% sales rate. The world's best salesmen are lucky to maintain a 10% sales rate. 10% equals one in every 10.
That's right.
So it is a game of numbers, isn't it?
Yep. That it absolutely is. And if people could remember that, they would look at dating much differently, and they wouldn't take it so personally. You know, it's like when if you go through one of these department stores and they're spraying that cologne on you and asking you if you like it, you can't expect every person that you spray is going to go and want to buy your cologne.
That's such a good
point. They're not offended. That's just the way it is. But for some reason, when it comes to dating, yeah. We all think the person that we pick out should immediately like us. Well, the odds of that are so slim. And if you're
so
one
slim.
Of those that gets that kind of attention, man, you better count yourself in the real lucky ones.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you also about, because your Nice Guys Finish Last piece is really, really right on. But let's talk a little bit about what the woman can do. Because sometimes women, when they can be, with some guys, overly aggressive.
Oh boy.
And for instance,
that's women's lib. The feminist movement's done
yeah.
that.
Yeah. But you know, I've noticed with some of my clients and just general observations that when a man acts withdrawn, that's a signal that he's undergoing his own emotional process and needs time to recharge. And then once he's ready to share his feelings, he'll be back. But if a woman tries to convince him or overshare her own feelings, it often will backfire because he needs some space to go through
his own feelings. Exactly. He not only needs that, but remember that what I said before was things that are too easily acquired
mm-hmm.
and don't take work and don't take effort, and that especially applies to men.
Mm-hmm.
Because men have been conditioned their whole lives that they have to work for everything.
That's right.
Yes. So now all of a sudden, here's this woman trying to pressure him into a relationship. What's she done? Now she's taken away all her value.
Mm-hmm.
She's no longer valuable because she's doing all the chasing, and men are hunters by nature. You got to let them be a man. Don't try to put a skirt on them. Let them be a man. And men like to pursue. That's just in their nature.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to let him. And you're doing yourself a disservice because you're not letting him feel like a man. Every man wants to feel like a Superman. They want to feel like a hero. And if you take away their ability to feel like the best man that they can be, well, they're not going to feel as good around you because you
mm-hmm.
haven't allowed them to feel like the strong man that he is.
And I agree with you. He may need temporarily some space.
Yes.
And if the woman keeps trying to fill the space,
he's going to back away.
Yeah, he can't step forward. And so I think it means that a woman needs to let go of her need to control what happens next and give him a chance to call, make plans with you, and initiate affection. And I was thinking about my early stages with Charlie, my late husband. And he was a catch. I mean, He was good looking. He was wealthy. He was such a nice guy. And his wife had died of cancer. And and so since I had known him from college days, he reconnected, and we saw each other one time at a party in Honolulu when I flew out from San Francisco. And so he tracked me down after his first wife had died.
Oh, my goodness. You must have made some impression.
Well, but then, but here's the story that, so he was just such an amazing man. And so he joked with me early on in our relationship, and he said, I didn't even get to put out the for sale sign, because a lot of women in Honolulu, and you know some of them can be predatory. It's a small island.
Yes.
So he said, so I said to him, well, Charlie, I think that you should, because I was living in Palo Alto, and we would get together every 2 weeks or go on a trip together, either in Honolulu or Palo Alto. I said, I think you should date other women, because you haven't had an opportunity to do that.
Oh, boy, did your stock just go up or what?
It did. It did, but I had to have the confidence to say that and to mean it. And guess what? He decided not to.
Oh, of course.
Not of course. I mean, but I had to take that risk. But the point is, I gave him the space to date other women, to have this experience as a relatively young widower. And it really did work. I didn't say it, you know, with an intention to...
No, you actually meant it. But that's why your stock
it.
Went up so high, because you knew you meant it. And P.S.,
right.
You know what else that meant?
What?
That meant you were going to keep seeing other people.
Yeah. Well, at the time, I didn't, because life was complicated enough.
Yeah, well, he assumed, because he wants you, everybody else wants you. So he didn't like that picture in his head at all.
Probably so.
No.
And then, you know, kind of in the same arena, I think about, and I want to get your reaction to this, you know, because you get a lot of questions about law, about relationships that are... across, you know, many miles.
Yeah,
so,
long distance romance.
Long distance.
Oh, yes.
And
a ton of questions on that.
And so, and should we be monogamous? And so I think if you're with a man who's has a wandering eye, who wants an open relationship, and that's not what the woman wants, then she can say, you have every right to be with any woman you want, not just when you're with me. And that very clear statement, it conveys your wishes, but also respects his right to choose. Does that figure into any of your answers or your thinking?
It does, and it's interesting, because this online long-distance romance is a newer scenario as a result of, you know, all the online dating.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
More often than not, what I see, and this is what always posted on my website, is the romance rarely progresses, but you know, into real life.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting to me. People will carry on a romance, and it's all online, and it's fascinating. They haven't met, and yet somehow they feel committed to each other without meeting, and it's interesting, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of times what happens is, unbeknownst to one of the parties, one of them usually has various relationships going concurrently. The other one doesn't, but
mm-hmm.
one does.
Mm.
And it's just very interesting. I think to expect someone to be to answer your first question, to expect someone to be monogamous when you're in a very long-distance relationship and you see each other once or twice a year, I don't think that's going to work very well for very long.
I don't think it's realistic.
No.
But I think it needs to be discussed.
Yes, it does.
Because the expectations may be a little off.
Well, that gets into the whole other thing, expectations. And I think
mm-hmm.
that's what causes so many problems. So many people, you know, start relationships without even knowing what they want. And you need to know what your expectations are and how you define a relationship, because people have different ways of defining it, particularly these days.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really true, that women often create expectations about what the relationship is supposed to look like and how he is supposed to behave. And when he falls short of all that, then she becomes disappointed and unfulfilled.
Yes. Often that revolves around sex, too. So many women think mm-hmm. because they have sex with a man or a man has sex with them, that means something. All it means is they had sex.
Yeah, I've heard you say that, you know, men have sex because they can.
Yes.
And they often don't put the same value on it as women do. That's a generalization, but
yes.
I think it's often true.
Correct. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
It is a generalization, but it happens to be one that is more often than not true.
Mm-hmm.
And then women try to leverage the sex into something more. And I always tell women, you know, just because a guy has sex with you doesn't mean you're the one. It doesn't mean he wants to date you. And frankly, it doesn't even necessarily mean he likes you. It means because he
mm-hmm.
wanted to have sex and you were willing. Or you pursued him to have sex, thinking you could get something more out of the relationship than the sex.
So what's your best advice, darling, ask April, about having sex on the first date?
Well, it depends on what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for a monogamous long-term relationship, I wouldn't recommend it. But there are some people who aren't looking for that. And if you're not looking for that, and you know you're not looking for that, you just want to have a good time, that's up to you, as long as you
mm-hmm.
use safe sex. But I think it's a mistake for women who think if they sleep with a guy on the first date that it's going to turn into much more, because generally speaking, I don't think it does. Because what happens is that guy thinks right away, well, she must do this with everybody. Doesn't mean that you do, but that's what he's
exactly.
going to be thinking. And the other
he
thing
makes
is,
assumptions.
Yes, he makes assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got nothing to work with but what he knows, which is you slept with him on the first date,
mm-hmm.
so why would he think you don't do that with everybody else?
Yeah.
And I think if the sex is absolutely knock your socks off, there's a chance that it'll keep going. But if it's not, if it's mediocre, no, not going to happen.
Good answer. It sort of aligns with what I think, too.
What is that? What do you think?
Well, I think the same thing. That a woman needs to get very clear about what she wants
yes.
and what she expects in her love life. And if the chemistry is really spectacular, and especially if she's a more mature woman, she may have sex even sooner than maybe a younger woman because she knows what she wants and she is with a man who knows what he wants, and since they're more mature, it may be drama-free.
Right.
And that's a relief. And, you know, when you get older, you don't want to waste time.
Right. And they may not, the older women may not necessarily be looking for a committed relationship either.
Well, that's true. That's true. In my case, I was, because I had such a good last marriage, and Charlie's death was so unexpected, but it took me 10 years to find Brian, my now fiance. 10 years, so I know about online dating because I did it, and I persevered and I stayed optimistic, and I found Brian, and we got engaged about 2 months ago. So it's all it has
wow,
a happy ending.
Congratulations! That's really fantastic. So
thank
you. You had to kiss a lot of frogs.
I did, about 50.
Is that right? Good for
mm-hmm.
you.
I know.
So you knew what you wanted.
Yep, I knew what I wanted, but, you know, I've had some life experience, and that's I say this to people all the time, you know, keep your eyes open, learn and improve, and then you know better what you want. Let's segue a little bit more into online dating conversation. There was a television show called The Dating Game, and this is a very long time ago, but I was a contestant, and I won Rich Little, the comic impersonator, on this show.
What do you mean you won him?
I won him because It was an April 1st show, but they taped it in March, and I didn't know that. And so Rich Little, because, you know, you couldn't see the bachelors on the other side. You could only hear them.
Ah, okay.
So he did all three bachelors. But I picked the English guy because I'd had, it was an English, wonderful English impersonator of Terry Thomas, the English actor. I'm really dating myself because this is a long time ago. But so I picked Terry Thomas, and so I won Rich Little, and we went on a trip. Well, first we did have a few dates just to see if we liked each other. But anyway, so that relationship didn't last that long, but it was kind of fun. And now, with the Internet, of course, anyone can play their own dating game online. And
yes.
So...
Do a lot of your clients use online dating?
The ones who are single do, and I've had also, like I'm seeing a couple in their early 70s, and they met on Match.com, just as Brian and I in our 60s met on Match.com. And that is the largest demographic for online dating. And
which is?
People over 50.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, people appreciate some of the pluses of online dating where you at least get a profile. There was something on the Today Show this morning, or Good Morning America, I don't remember which. So they were saying that OkCupid took down photographs in the profiles.
Oh.
For it was an experiment for several days. And they found that a couple thousand people had much more in-depth conversations without a photo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but I think we need to have a good photo, several photos, a fairly current one, right? And then your profile is your first impression. What do you say to people about writing a profile?
Keep it short.
Uh-huh.
Keep it short and simple. Let it be snappy, and the headline has to be very catchy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, forget about the walks on the beach. Forget about, you know, you're a really nice person, blah, blah, blah. You know,
right.
That doesn't get you anywhere.
Uh-huh.
You know, be a little cutting edge. Take a risk.
Take a risk, yeah.
Yeah. Put something up there, you know, think of something funny to put up there. If you can make people laugh, boy, you get their attention. You know, say something that is a little tongue-in-cheek, or say something that is a double entendre, you know, that it could be taken two ways. So you make it so that the person has to clarify, did you mean this or did you mean this? Because then it's a conversation starter, too.
Now that's really good advice. Yeah.
Then they have an easy thing to ask you,
mm-hmm.
You know, or say something challenging. So
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you have kind of be a little bit of a wise guy. So they come back and say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, you got their attention. That's what you're trying to do.
That's what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yes.
The profile is all about getting someone's attention.
Getting somebody's attention,
yeah.
Yes.
And once you have their attention, then it's up to you to keep it and to learn more about the person. But all the profile and the pictures, you know, do originally is just get someone's attention. That's it. I mean, these people that write these novels up there, that's a waste. First off, it's a turnoff in a way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But second, you know, men in particular, and
mm-hmm.
which is interesting about that OkCupid thing, men are very visual.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't care how compatible you are on paper. This would sound terrible. You could be the most compatible people on earth on paper, but if a guy's not attracted to you, I'm sorry. It's not going very far, and it's not his fault. He's just a man, and men have to be physically attractive.
So
women tend to look for other qualities.
The photograph gives the guy some clues,
yeah.
But then you really have to meet in person.
Absolutely.
To know if there's chemistry.
Yes.
And if there's not chemistry, it's probably not going to go very far.
No, it's not. In fact, that's one of the things that I talk about with the online dating. This goes back to that phenomenon where people conduct entire relationships online. I generally tell them, if you haven't met somebody after 3 months of communicating, move on to the next one.
Oh, yes. I don't get that. And then what I also don't get, maybe it's my age, but where young people will just do texting all the time.
Oh,
they don't even have a telephone conversation.
No, well, they don't like the telephone. They don't even communicate.
Yeah. So,
well,
April, we're going to go to the break now, the half-hour break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk more about this, because lots of our listeners need to hear what we wise women are saying, and you especially. AskApril.com is your website and your where people can ask you questions, and we can hear your advice today, and I'm so happy about that. So,
well, thank you.
You're welcome. So stay with us, and April and I will be right back. Yeah, sex is good, relationships are good, and I'm talking with a relationship expert, April Messini, and she has a great forum. Any of you listeners would benefit, probably, from writing to her on AskApril.com. And one of the things you say, April, is it's important to have matching baggage. And
yes.
How important is that in a relationship?
Oh, I think it's pretty important, because it all comes down to values and being motivated in the same direction. I'll give you an example. If you marry a man, not you, but if a woman marries a man and he has children with an ex-wife and the children are young and he's got child support and alimony, he's going to be giving money from your relationship to that spouse and those children. Now, let's say those children now want to play tennis. Well, instead of going on vacation, perhaps, he's going to put the money towards their tennis lessons. And instead of saving for retirement, like you might want to do, he's going to need to be saving for their college.
Yes.
So it's very difficult to be motivated in the same direction if you don't have shared goals. And if you're a woman who has children and he has children and your ex-husband is helping you, much like he's helping his ex-wife, well, then you can understand it a lot better. And you'd be more accommodating to it. But if you don't have any and everything you have is going into the relationship and everything he has, or most of it or a lot of it, is going to his former relationship, well, that causes trouble.
It does. And I know about, personally, I know about blended families, and clinically I know about blended families, and it can be very challenging with children and new marriages. And the Step Family Association of America was formed in 1973, but before that there was no research done on blended families. And what they found out way back then was that it takes between 3 to 5 years for a blended family, this would be parents and or step-parent and children, 3 to 5 years to have a sense of we.
Isn't that interesting? I'd never heard that statistic before.
Yeah, a sense of we, and also a lot of times new parents, or at least a husband, say, and a mother who's going to be a stepmother, there's the expectation that there will be instant love.
Right.
And that just isn't realistic.
No, it's not.
Because you come from different traditions, typically,
well,
and different
backgrounds. Well, that can cause a problem, too, right there, what you just said. You come from different traditions. Well, now who are you going to follow? The same applies to rules. And standards of behavior, and the way that you expect people to behave, and, you know, what's important, what your priorities are, and what you want to teach a child. I mean, all of those, it just gets much more complicated the more people you get involved. You know, you got ex-spouses, you got ex-grandparents, you got, you know, it's just, unless you come into it and you're sharing the same things with your new spouse, I think it's very problematic, and not to say you shouldn't do it. just recognize what you're getting into.
And keep your eyes open. But let's back up, because I think when you're dating,
yes,
you might find a man or a woman who has emotional baggage of fear, anxiety, or mental conflicts and past hurts in interpersonal,
yep,
situations. So, you know, it's very clear that online dating does not heal the emotional pains. And I'm a little biased in this regard, but psychotherapy may be necessary. So I think it's important to look for a man or a woman who has already done some of his or her own inner work.
Yes. Well, that's an interesting thing, because I'm frequently asked, one of the typical questions I get is, what is the biggest mistake I see people making on a first date?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's very simple. They go into a first date and don't know what they want. They don't know,
yes,
you know, what their no-nos are, meaning they're things that they're not willing to give up or things that they're not willing to settle for.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you don't want to be a stepmother or stepfather and you're looking for a serious relationship, do not accept dates with people with young kids. Simple as that.
Good advice. Very good advice, but some people get swept away and they think...
Oh, believe me, I understand that.
I know.
But if that's a deal breaker, or if it's a new deal breaker, no, yeah, going forward. If you don't want to be a step-parent and you don't want all those entanglements, avoid people who have young children. They could be the nicest person in the world, and you could love them with all your heart, but if you're not compatible in your core values and if you're not motivated in the same direction, the chances of it working are very slim. And relationships are hard to begin with. Don't make it harder on yourself.
And this is why second and third marriages often end.
Oh, yes.
Statistically, we know this.
Yeah, 70%, they say, is the failure rate. And
70%.
But what people don't like to talk about, which is the truth, that number's thrown around a lot and everybody's heard it. The thing is that no one wants to talk about the reason why that is. It doesn't mean either spouse is a bad person. What it means is that they're bringing things into the relationship that they have responsibilities for, or they're just not motivated in the same direction, like we just discussed. And it's,
mm-hmm,
very difficult for that to be worked out. It's almost impossible. If you're not motivated in the same direction, the chances of that relationship working are very, very slim, I think.
Well, I agree, and the statistics back that up, and I've had enough clients to know that. And it's really sad, because oftentimes the husband and wife really love each other and they want it to work, but they've got these kids and they're trying to blend the families, and the kids might have certain problems, and
Yep. They're
missing the absent parent even though they have custodial time with them, and it gets so complicated.
Yep, it sure does.
And
children are children, and then they try to manipulate a little bit, or... You know, it just, you have every human being has a personality. Then you got to work all that in.
Mm-hmm.
Very complicated.
So in general, though, I think we need to seek, going away from, a possible date or person with children, but seek a mate whose values and background echo your own, because opposites don't attract forever. So you want to have shared values, personality traits, economic background, maybe even religion, depending upon your own situation, as well as closeness and age. All of these things have statistically shown to contribute to romantic success.
Right. So, now, economic background, that's an interesting one.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I would have thought that would be similar values in regard to money, meaning work ethic and things of that nature, because someone may grow up poor,
mm-hmm,
and become wealthy and have worked for everything they have, and you could have the same type of person who grew up with money and who also works hard, and I would think that they might be somewhat compatible.
I agree, and you saw that with Al, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm, we both came from poor backgrounds.
Oh, I didn't know that about you.
Oh, yeah, we both did. So, and we both, you know,
and
didn't
you both
have a
worked very hard to.
Yep, we had
overcome.
very similar backgrounds. And as much as both of us were lacking a father, we both worked very hard from a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both were self-made. We had a lot in common in that regard. So that would back up what you just said, similar economic backgrounds, because we certainly did.
Yes, yes.
But
the shared values and the personality traits can be important, too, the shared values.
Yes. Well, if you have someone who's a social butterfly and another one who's an introvert, the introvert is not going to feel very comfortable being out on the town every night being forced to talk.
No.
You know, that's they're just not going to like that. And frequently you see that. You see very introverted men being attracted to very vivacious, outgoing women who are the life of the party. And I can see how their attraction would be to them because they can do everything that they would like to be able to do, they being the woman, and that's very attractive. The problem is that woman, generally speaking, likes to be very social.
Mm-hmm.
And an introvert is going to be exhausted and stressed out going out every night being forced to be very social because he's not comfortable talking all the time. And
no, and he needs space and time to process his
that's
feelings
right.
And so he won't go out every night.
No, but that's going to...
But then that creates some friction.
Right, because that's where she wants to go if she's the social. And it can be reversed, too.
It can be reversed, yeah.
Yeah, but that's going to... There you go again. You know, what do you value? Do you value having a very active social life, or do you value having quiet time? I mean, it all comes down to values. You know, you have to have compatible values.
Or you have to be willing to make some compromises that work for both
of course.
You. Yeah.
Right. Because you're not going to be twins. Let's hope not.
No, that's right. And that's why opposites don't attract forever.
Right.
They don't. And there's a wonderful book that my son sent me, actually, some time ago. Called Quiet by Susan Cain. She's a Harvard Law School graduate and became a lawyer. And
what's it about?
It's about introversion, quiet.
Ah.
And now she has a company called Quiet Revolution. And I met a young woman here in Seattle who's doing research for her.
Oh.
It's the company is actually currently located just outside of New York City, but the website, still under development, but already has some really good stuff, including a TED Talk by Susan Cain, is quietrev.com. So Rev for revolution, and in this book she explains the introverted personality very well, and I think especially those of us who are extroverts really need to take time, slow down, and understand better the more introverted person and give them some space and time to process stuff.
So if you were describing an introverted personality, what would you say their top five needs are or top bullet points that would describe that personality type based on her book?
Well, first of all, he or she needs to have some space to process stuff. And I talk about it as going up in one's emotional brain and climbing up there and looking down on whatever's happened. And they can get really overwhelmed if they don't have time to process time to process whatever's gone on. And then the other thing is you don't want immediate feedback from an introvert. And this is
that's interesting. So they have to assess their feelings first and their process.
Yeah, this is why they often don't do very well in brainstorming sessions in companies.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, but you want to... And then you don't want to interrupt an introvert because when they finally speak, you know, they want to speak.
And do they tend to speak more slowly?
They can. But the main thing to be sensitive about is that introverts can get overwhelmed with too many people that they don't know.
Right.
And that's why big parties are usually not their cup of tea at all.
Right.
Now, there are some people, you know, the Myers-Briggs personality inventory has been around for a long time. And it clearly delineates the introvert and the extrovert. And this test has been around since the late 1940s. But now there's some research that says that it can't always be so clearly delineated. And then furthermore, somebody who tests as an introvert in the beginning, then he goes along or she goes along in their work and they're forced to be more extroverted. Not saying that one way or the other is better, but they're forced to be more extroverted. So then they take the test again and they come out a little more E than I.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, but I think, you know, introverts are often more sensitive. They listen well, but they do have, and I bet you get a lot of questions on your forum, perhaps from more shy people, more introverted people, like how do I small talk strategy? How do I open a conversation?
Right. Well, you also get a lot of young guys that write in and they try to befriend a woman first,
mm-hmm.
and think that they're going to somehow leverage that into a relationship,
mm-hmm.
and it very rarely works. Once you're trapped in the friend zone, you almost never escape. That's pretty much where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get asked, how do you get out of the friend zone? Well, the answer is one you probably don't want, but it's very simple. If you want to be more than a friend, you got to act like more than a friend, and then you got to ask the woman on a date. Because if you don't ask her on a date, you're never going to know. And you can waste years being a, you know, friend in quotes when you really don't want to be a friend. And if that's really what you don't want, it's kind of based on dishonesty, because let's say you're a woman's best friend, for the sake of argument, right? And so she keeps telling you about all these great guys that she's met or some great guy she's dating, and then she asks her best friend for advice. Well, very hard for a guy who's in love with a woman to give her advice on another guy.
Oh, yeah. Painful.
Painful. And also, I would fathom a guess, it's not going to be the best advice he could give her because he really doesn't want her with him.
Yeah, of course.
So that whole thing is a lose-lose. And then it goes back to you need to respect yourself enough to take the risk of asking her out. And if she says no, the rejection's a gift because she saved you years of your life because you're wasting it. And time you should never waste because we don't have much of it.
I realize that the older I get.
I'm telling you what, isn't that true? You don't recognize it when you're very young, but you should never waste your time or somebody else's because it is the most valuable commodity.
It's a very precious commodity, yes.
Yes, it is. And while you're healthy, especially.
And while you're healthy?
Healthy, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, you have good health.
Oh, yeah. And that takes some consciousness and work.
Yes.
But I think that some of these people, the introverts that have some trouble with dating, it's more than just shyness, that they're experiencing actually some form of social anxiety, and that would be the fear, an excessive fear of being criticized and rejected by others.
Yes.
And you know, the amygdala is the part of the brain that houses fear and anxiety. And so in some of these people, they develop a hypervigilant fear system that houses itself in the amygdala. And so you have fight or flight modes that are triggered. And kind of a red alert means that the anxiety is likely to come back the next time when they're in a similar situation. This is really hard for a lot of these folks.
Yes.
That I've been here before and it's going to come back and that's why I don't really want to go to this social thing. So it takes some kind of pushing oneself, I think, to go to social, if you're an introvert or really shy.
No question.
To go to social events.
And it's exhausting for them.
Absolutely,
yes, exhausting, because it takes everything they've got just to get themselves out of the house and to force themselves to have a conversation, God forbid, when they go into a place where they don't know anybody. Sounds like a nightmare to them. And then you have, extroverts who are like, oh, gosh, I've never met anyone I didn't know.
Yeah. But, you know, the research does show that people with social anxiety tend to pay more attention to threatening information. So I think you have to retrain the brain to come to sort of hone in on more positive information.
What do you mean to pay more attention to threatening information? I don't know what that means.
Well, it means that because of their brain, the amygdala part, that they've had difficulties in past situations, so they focus in on...
Cues that tell them
cues.
That this is going to happen. Uh-huh. Okay,
yeah.
I'll help you now.
So they have to retrain their brains. But I say, you know, go to a party on time and start some conversations and know what's going on in the world and prepare a few topics of conversation in advance. And
I always tell them, bring a prop.
Oh, yeah, that's good, too. Like, what would you say about that?
Like, bring a newspaper.
Bring a
magazine, bring a newspaper. And you can always ask someone their opinion about some article, and everyone loves to give their opinion. Best conversation starter is to ask someone what their opinion is about anything.
Well, then, and that's where an introvert also has an advantage, because they can ask, say a man to a woman, her opinion about something, and that's always that's always a compliment.
Yes, well, then they're going to think they're the best conversationalists around. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if you ask extrovert about themselves, they love no better topic than talking about themselves.
That's right. That's very true.
And if introverts could focus on just asking a lot of questions,
yeah,
they would very easily get out of, not very easily, but certainly much easier get out of the uncomfortable feeling, because now they don't have to do the talking, and the person who likes to do the talking is doing all the talking.
Well, the secret to a good conversation is to make the other person feel interesting.
That's right.
And then to be a good listener. And in general, introverts tend to be better listeners.
Yes, they do.
And that's a plus.
Yes, they do.
So
More sensitive, too, generally.
Uh-huh. So I will suggest, like, an opening line. Oh, they say, "What? You know, how can I begin a conversation?" So I suggest make a comment about your shared environment, like, "So who do you know here?"
Right.
Or what do you think about the music? Or maybe you say something, three things about if you're an introverted person about being there, and then the other person has something to go on. Or when you're introducing yourself, offer more than just your name and occupation. Give some details that allow for a conversation.
Right. Or great shoes, great tie.
Yeah.
What are you drinking? That looks
right.
good.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And that's, again, the shared environment. Well, you and I have just begun to scratch the surface. So I've heard that you don't mind coming back. We don't know exactly when, because you're very busy traveling. But I hope that it's within a month or two.
Oh, that would be great, Diana. Really would. It's always so much fun chatting with you.
Well, I have fun chatting with you, too, and I just wish I could see you more, but that's not as likely.
Far away.
Yeah, you're in Florida and I'm in Seattle. But we do want to talk about some other things, because you get lots of other questions on your forum, and including how can I prevent my significant other from cheating again, and lots of questions. Well, we covered that a little bit. We could do it more on monogamy and long-distance relationships. And let's see, we also didn't get to some of the effects of child-centric relationships. We touched on some of the problems with second and third marriages where there are children.
But you knew some interesting stats on child-centric relationships, didn't you?
I do. And the current issue of Psychology Today has some really good information about that. More than 100 studies show that marital satisfaction falls off a cliff after the birth of a first child and doesn't get much better until the last child leaves for college.
Is that right?
Yes.
And what is that based upon? Men feeling neglected or?
Well, it has to do, yes, in part. But it has to do with the couple focusing in on each other, not focusing in on each other, and just focusing on the child or the children. This is not second or third marriages. This is the first marriage.
Well, isn't
children.
That interesting? Because when you think about that, if those marriages have trouble with child-centric relationships and they have the shared child,
right.
Imagine how difficult that is when it's not even your child.
Exactly. It's just compounded.
Yes.
The Gottmans, who are a local couple here who've done research for 30 years, John and Julie Gottman, they have a lot of studies that back up all these statistics. So I'm hearing the music. We'll talk about this and more when you return to this program, April.
Thank you so much, Dr. Diana.
Oh,
it was so great talking with you.
Thank you, April.
And I look forward to doing it again sometime soon. I'd love to see those statistics, in fact.
Yeah, I'll make sure you get them.
Yeah, I would
and,
love
And we'll talk some more. And I
Thank
hope
you.
Within a month or two. And,
that would be great.
Good. Thanks again,
Thank
April.
You
You're
for
always
having
such
me.
A lively, informative, lovely guest.
A lot of fun. Thank you.
A lot of
Bye-bye.
Fun. You're welcome. Bye-bye.